Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening. Welcome to the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Lodo. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for supporting independent bookstores and for supporting our author events. We're always excited to bring great authors to you. It is a great pleasure for me to introduce New York Times bestselling author of the much beloved Water for Elephants, Sarah Gruen, who will talk about her new novel, Ape House. This is an incredible story of a group of bonobo apes, the study of their language skills, of a scientist for the great ape language lab, Isabel, who feels she's almost part of the bonobo family, how the media fits in, animal terrorists, porn stars, and a reality show. So, I mean, Sarah's really done her homework on a lot of different things in writing this book. And I know that she spent a great deal of time and effort studying the bonobos and their plight in this world, and spent some time at the Great Ape Trust, which is in Iowa, and she'll tell you more about that. And if you haven't heard of bonobo apes before, which I didn't, although my best friend works for the bonobo conservation initiative, so I was lucky enough to hear about them a little earlier than some. They're quite interesting, and there are a lot of books on just themselves. So I'm sure she'll tell you more about where you can find out more information and more about the trust. This is going to be a perfect book club book because there's a lot to discuss. There is a lot going on in this book. It really keeps you hopping. And I just hope everybody passes the word around and gives it to all their friends. And let's welcome Sarah Gruen. Thank you.
Thank you. Give me just a second to get myself settled. Last time I was in Denver, but one, I fainted. It's okay, though. I can be brought back with orange juice. What I'm going to do tonight probably is just ramble a little bit about some of the research I did for the book, do a short reading, because I really firmly believe that people don't love to hear authors read in a monotone from their book for 20 minutes. And then do Q&A, which is my favorite part of the event. And please don't be shy about asking questions, because if you are, I will run like a scared bunny. Thank you again for coming out. And before I forget, I want to say thank you especially for supporting the Tattered Cover and independent bookstores. It's so important right now, as you all know. So I just wanted to say a special thank you for that. About 4 years ago, when I was actually right before I came here and fainted, somebody sent me an email that contained a link to the Great Ape Trust website, and I went and started looking around at it. And they do language acquisition and cognition studies there, and I've always been fascinated with the idea of language acquisition and communicating with apes in human language. And I also had never heard of bonobos before, which surprised me. And so I was doubly fascinated and almost immediately knew that I wanted to do my next book about them. Bonobos are the most recently discovered of the great ape species, and they share 98.7% of their DNA with us, which is the same amount as chimpanzees do. And interestingly, they are 98.7% shared DNA with chimpanzees. So if you picture a perfect triangle, we're the three points. And they look fairly similar to chimpanzees, although there are some physical differences. They have what I consider the bonobo hairstyle. It's black hair parted straight down the center. It's what they're born with. That's just how their hair goes. And their limbs are longer and more elegant. Slightly more slender build than chimpanzees, so they look like the ballet dancers of the ape world. I really wanted to meet these apes, and I didn't think I could do the book properly without meeting them. And so I wrote to the trust, and I said, "Can I come meet your apes?" I guess everybody in the world wants to come and meet these apes. And so they sent me a long list of books and journals and things that I had to read, and also assigned me to a linguistics course, crash course in Toronto with some linguists who are working with the data that's been collected at the Trust. So I went there, and I never thought that I would use the word linguistics and fun in the same sentence. But when I left that office, I had a blast, and I walked to the bus stop that night when what I really wanted to do was walk to the enrollment office and start over again. Although in order to be a primatologist, I probably would have had to complete biology. And when I got to high school biology, it turns out I was incapable of dissecting a worm. So that was that. I did do the homework, and I finally got the coveted invitation to the Trust. Which does not mean that you're going to get to meet the apes, because that part is up to the apes. This is the apes' home. And so I knew this ahead of time, and I tried to stack my odds like the guy in my book. I bought backpacks for each of the apes, and I packed them full of toys and foods and anything I thought might be interesting or fun or tasty for an ape. So it was bouncy balls, slinkies, Mr. Potato Heads, Rubik's Cubes, most importantly, M&Ms. And various things. I sent an email a couple of days ahead of time and said, can you please tell the apes that I'm bringing surprises? And so after the human orientation, and they told me, oh, did you know such and such about bonobos? I'm like, yeah, I read all the books. Will the apes see me? And so they went and asked the apes and came back and said, well, not only are they going to let you in, they're insisting. And so I took my backpacks and I went into to the Trust. And I think I skipped the personality and the culture of the bonobos and the reason they are so different from the other great apes. Bonobos are matriarchal, egalitarian, peaceful, and extremely, extremely amorous. The average bonobo initiates some kind of sexual contact every hour and a half. And so it opened all sorts of possibilities for the reality TV show situation. But I went in and I met, first of all, Kanzi, who is really kind of the rock star of the Great Ape Trust, and he knows it. And when I say rock star, I mean he's actually recorded with Paul McCartney and Peter Gabriel. So he came in and he was displaying and swaggering and had his hair all up on end and banging into the walls and happily played music with me and talked to me using his keyboard. They use a system of lexigrams, these apes, and those are pictorial representations of words. And when they're in the lab and when they're using their keyboard, a human voice says the word that represents the lexigram that they've just touched. So Kanzi was showing off his skills and playing music and so on. And then I met his sister, Pam Benicia, who is arguably more linguistically competent, but she doesn't make up her mind right away about people. She waits until she sees if she likes you, basically. And so I knew that Pam Benicia likes dogs and not cats. In fact, she has two dogs, Samson and Delilah. And I know that she's a mother, and I'm a mother. And so I brought pictures of my dogs, and I brought pictures of my kids. And I showed her the picture of the dogs first, and she just stared. Nothing. And so then I showed her a picture of my kids, and this was from when they were much younger, and all three of them were piled into a big bubble bath. And she went to her computer and said, baby's washing bubbles. And that was the first time that we had a two-way conversation, and I was astounded. I know it's what I didn't realize or recognize at that time was that, of course, because they're matriarchal, being a mother gave me instant status, and so I was in. But, you know, by the end of the day, we were chatting, and the scientists came because they had to go home for dinner, and they dragged me out, and the bonobos were, Kanzi and Pam Benicia were saying, no, you've got to come out to the play yard and meet our mother, and I had to leave, not by choice. And the next day, Pam Benicia said, where's Sarah? Build her nest. When's she coming back? So, naturally, I sent them a Fruit of the Month Club. I wanted to keep the invitation open, but I was actually underestimating them. And if I don't circle back to that eventually, blame the oxygen-deprived brain here I am in Denver. But I did underestimate her powers of recollection. So the next time I went back and visited, Pam Benicia knew that I was dedicating the book to her. And so she got to be the rock star for the day. And so I went out there, and there was a film crew along, and I was getting my makeup done out back, and Pam Benicia heard about it and wanted her makeup done. And so the makeup girl gamely picked up her kit and her stool, and we climbed over the barriers into the back. And Pam Benicia and I got our makeup done together, and she wore bright purple lipstick and powdered her cheeks. She put some purple lipstick on her arms where she felt it was necessary as well. And then she invited me to have a tea party with her in the forest. And I knew that I might get a walk with her, but this was very special. And this is probably a good point to mention that it was a Tuesday and the bonobos had been declared overweight and were on diets Tuesdays and Thursdays. So Pam Benicia invited me to this tea party in the forest. And I waited out back for what seemed like forever. And it wasn't until, you're on ape time. Once you get into the trust, everything is on their schedule. And so I was waiting forever. And I learned later that the humans had set out the blankets and the plates and so on. And Pam Benicia got upset because she wanted to do it. So they had to take it all down and then let her do it. And she brewed the tea. She has a kitchen. This is an ape that makes ramen noodles. She works a gas range. So she made Earl Grey for me, and she made Blackberry for herself. And because she knew I'd been coming, that I was coming, she had been saving her cookies for a week. And so she set everything out, and finally I was allowed to join her, and I went and I sat on the blanket with her. And she asked me if I wanted milk for my tea. I said, sure. And I used some milk, and I handed it back to her, and she went, and completely drained it. And then she told me which cookies I should eat and in what order and which ones I should dip in my tea. And so I did. And then after three, she asked me if I was finished with my cookies. And I said, sure. And I handed her the plate and she went. And just so then I think she felt bad about my cookie list state. So she went off into the forest and brought me back a very specially selected branch of leaves. And so I watched one of the people from the trust eat a leaf and really hoped that they weren't faking it and that it wasn't poisonous. And so I sat there and politely ate my brows. Would have been a lot better with olive oil, but. Pam Benicia then asked me if I'd had a hard-boiled egg for breakfast. And I said, no. And then she said, the bunny recently hid eggs in the forest. And then she looked pensive and said, I wish the bunny would come back. Well, this is the trust, so a guy in a walkie-talkie in the background, and 5 minutes later, the Easter Bunny comes out the back door and plants more eggs in the forest for us to find. And she let me go and look for and find the first one, which was really sweet. But tell me she wasn't milking the Diet Tuesdays a little bit. And so that night, we went to an off-site interview, and I was there with one of the scientists, and we got a phone call at around 5 o'clock, and I didn't realize at the time that Alikia was pregnant, but one of the apes, Alikia, was declaring that she was not going to eat until I'd come back because I'd spent so much time with Pam Benicia that the rest of them did not feel that I'd said goodbye adequately. And so I had to go back in the morning before my flight. So I ordered 6 green apples from room service, and I dropped by Starbucks, and I got the Matcha coffee. And I went and I said goodbye to each ape, and I had to explain to them that I had to go home to my own nest and my own family now. And one of the adolescent males was really concerned about my nest. Was it a good nest? Was it a soft nest? And I assured him that, yes, it was. And then I said goodbye to Pam Benicia last, and I gave her the apple. And she took a bite of it and realized I didn't have an apple, and so she tried to give me the other part of her apple. And I'm not allowed to take anything from her after she's bitten. It's USDA laws, or I don't actually know why they have anything to do with it, but they do. So they got me my own apple from the kitchen, and then she noticed that I didn't have a coffee, and she wanted me to have a coffee. And so I had to lie to her, and a little white lie anyway. I told her that, oh, I had already had my coffee. I can only have one coffee, and truth is I'd only brought enough coffees for the apes. But she was satisfied with that, and so she drank her coffee, and we just, the last few minutes of that visit, I was lying side by side on a blanket with Pam Benicia, and we were just eating our apples together and not saying anything and not talking, just kind of looking at each other every once in a while and nodding like, yeah, this is a good apple. And when I left, and she was out, and I said, I have to go home to my family, and she asked if I would come next time with my family. And that was obviously an enormous honor. I don't think a lot of kids get into the trust, and so I was all over that. And so the last visit, which was just under a month ago, I went back there with my family, and I met up with Kanzi first, and we were playing tickle chase. Kanzi, he's about 30, and so he doesn't have the energy of some of the younger males there. And so what he likes to do, instead of playing tickle chase with you, he likes to have other people chase each other in front of him. He really likes to have girls do this. It's kind of like Ape Baywatch. But my kids are all boys, and so, you know, he invited me up. We played tickle chase for a while, and my 9-year-old is obviously smaller and obviously a juvenile. And so Kanzi invited us up to the glass and asked me for a kiss, and I gave him a kiss. And then he invited my 9-year-old up to the glass and gave him a kiss. And then he had my 12-year-old and me play tickle chase, and my 12-year-old caught me and tickled me. And Kanzi called him up to the glass, and this, my 12-year-old's taller than me quite a lot, and he called him up to the glass, Kanzi, and then he pulled his face away and slapped the glass. And I had to say, no, Kanzi, these are my babies. I know they're bigger than me, but these are actually my children. And, well, then I had to explain my husband, Bob. There is no concept of husband in Bonobo. Everybody is with everybody. And so I was saying, and this is Bob, my special friend. And my kids are like, oh, Mom. Oh. And we saw Pambanesha, and the last thing, and this is where I'm going to circle back to the memory thing, is the last thing that she said to me as I left last month was, next time you come, can you bring me a new potato head? That was 3 years ago that I brought her the potato head, and I have not mentioned it since, and she remembered that it was me who brought it and what it was. Not that I would ever deny them their fruit of the month. They're going to have Sarah's special fruit day once a month for as long as I'm alive. So that is the in a nutshell history of the research I did, which was obviously really fun and very interesting. And I incorporated these apes into the book. The story itself is fictional, and I changed, for the purposes of plot, I changed the lexigrams to the apes using American Sign Language, because the apes in my book are literally torn from their environment and needed to have their language tools on hand. And and the rest is kind of a I'm having a look at the celebrity culture and the tabloid journalism and the, you know, the celebutantes, the people who are famous because they leaked a sex tape of themselves 10 years ago, and other than that, I can't figure out why anyone's interested in them. And so there's a little bit of, well, quite a lot of that going on in the book, and just having a look at what the seedier side of our current culture is. When the book opens, the apes, an explosion goes off in their home, and the scientist who works with them, who loves them, and who considers them her family, is grievously injured, and the apes go missing for several months. And that is where I'm going to begin. Bonzi crouched in a dark corner with Lola clinging to her chest. She was the first to hear the jingling of keys and screeched a warning to the rest of her family. The men were back. The fluorescent lights flickered spasmodically and finally buzzed to life. In the cage opposite Bonzi and Lola, Sam screamed and sprinted around the small confines of his cell. He stopped to sign, "Bad visitor, bad visitor," then leapt onto the front of his extruded metal cage and shook it violently with hands and feet. When he jumped backward, his right thumb was bleeding. Oblivious to the wound, he perched near the front of his cage, his hair bristled and head cocked, on full alert. The other bonobos sat waiting, watching. Human footsteps followed, heavy-soled steps that echoed in the concrete hallway. As they approached, panic flooded Bonzi's body. She could never see them until they were immediately outside her space. Jelani, Sam, and McKenna were in cages across the aisle from Bonzi, so she could see all of them and they could see her, but they could not see each other because the walls between them were concrete. Nobody could see Mbango, but they knew he was there. He was the only member of the family out of sight of all the others, and the strain of this situation was clear in his vocalizations. The clomping got louder until the men came into sight. There were two this time. Bonzi recognized only one. He was the food giver, coming through the halls twice a day to slide trays of tasteless, homogeneous pellets through the slots in their cages and refill their water with a hose. He never made eye contact. He never spoke to them, but was always in deep, angry conversation with some invisible other. The second man was new. He had light hair, gray eyes, and a crooked, joyless smile. "These look like chimps," he said. "You're the one who wanted them," the food man said. The stranger turned his gaze upon him. "I'm just saying," said the food man. "We could have got chimps a lot cheaper." The alpha male, having asserted himself, stood with hands on hips and did what Bonzi could not. He moved his eyes across her family members and evaluated them. "Are they eating and whatnot?" he said. "They appear to be." "Pears," signed Bonzi. "Good pears. Bring pears." "Because I want them to look healthy. They can't appear to be mistreated." The alpha male crouched down outside Bonzi's cage and looked her in the eyes. "Which one is this? Is this the matriarch?" "Me, Bonzi. Bonzi, me," she signed. "Give me pears. Eggs. Good eggs. Sam hurt." "What the hell is that? Is that some kind of monkey voodoo? It's creeping me out," said the food man, averting his eyes. Bonzi held the alpha male's gaze and raised her left hand in a fist, which she flicked off her ear. Then she bounced her pointed index fingers off each other in front of her chest. "Shut up, Ray. She's trying to tell us something." "Sam hurt," repeated Bonzi more urgently. "Sam hurt. Need good pears." "What the hell is she doing?" said the non-dominant. The alpha continued to watch Bonzi, who repeated her assertions in ever more urgent motions. "She's saying something. What? I don't know." "Bonzi, out. Key, gimme. Hurry, you." The non-dominant's voice rose. "I don't like it. It's not right. Are these things even natural? Are they genetically engineered or something? Anyway, aren't they supposed to have sex all the time? They haven't done it once since they got here." "They're caged separately, you imbecile." The food man shifted from foot to foot, looking uncomfortably up and down the hall. "But you wait," said the alpha. "This is going to revolutionize everything." He leaned closer to the cage. "Are you my girl?" he whispered. Bonzi, whose response for no was simply not to respond, remained still. "You're my girl, aren't you?" he repeated. His voice was a hiss of rank breath between his teeth. Bonzi stayed motionless. "I'm going to move you soon." He rose and addressed the other man. "Come on, let's go." On his way past, he double-whacked the front of Sam's cage with an open palm. The clash reverberated through the cement hall, and Sam shrank into a corner. And that is your sneak preview. Thank you. They end up in, as I mentioned, in a reality TV show situation. And I would have, when I first started the book, I might have thought that it was sort of an out there thing that was going on, but then Jersey Shore got invented. So I'll take some questions now if that's. Yes. Would I explain
the forest and the glass?
The forest was an outdoor play yard with trees and actually a little bit of flooding because it's in Des Moines. The glass is between the visiting area between the apes. There's a plexiglass divider for protection. I actually would be entirely happy to be in a room with a bonobo while you could not pay me to be in a room with an unrestrained chimpanzee. Chimpanzees can and do rip people's faces off, and bonobos resolve things through sex. It's very casual to them. It's just sort of the social glue that keeps their society together. And other things that chimpanzees, infanticide, that is unheard of in bonobo culture. And the only instance of violence that I think is sort of marked and repeated is if a male bonobo approaches a female who's not receptive of him and tries to force himself upon her, that bonobo will be beset upon by 14 of her closest, very, very angry girlfriends. And he is corrected, as they put it. And so his genes never make it into the gene pool. And so there are two sort of hand-in-hand theories with that. The first is that the only males whose DNA makes it in are not violent. And the second is that since bonobos have sex all the time in every combination, no male bonobo knows which child is his, which baby is his. And so they're holding the baby as an honor, and male adult bonobos babysit on a regular basis. Yes?
When you packed the backpacks for the apes, were you told what to pack for them, or do you have this intuitive understanding of what bonobos like?
When I packed the backpacks, how did I know what to pack? If you go to the Great Ape Trust website, they have profiles of each of their bonobos. And so, for example, I knew that Pambanisha really likes rubber snakes, and Kanzi really loves green onions, and things like that. And, you know, they all have very different personalities. I packed identical backpacks just so that nobody, because they all compare notes, too. And I didn't want anyone to feel hard done by. But they all have very, very distinct personalities, and in ways that you wouldn't imagine. You know, Pambanisha, for example, loves horror movies, and she will watch Jurassic Park all day long if given a chance. And Kanzi, who's the big, tough male, really likes rainbows and birds tweeting in his movies. And Yoda, this is not perhaps surprising, but one of the adolescent males there went through a Harry Potter stage, and they needed to read Harry Potter to him every night before he went to bed. And now he's in a Spider-Man phase. So that was another thing. My kids brought us a Spider-Man shirt for Yoda when we went to visit last month. And Pambanisha immediately confiscated it and put it on. It's her shirt now. So. Yes?
Today show.
Absolutely, yes, that was Kanzi. That was Kanzi she was talking with.
Baby
Tico.
Will literally be able to speak.
I don't think that they're actually.
The doctor that's sleeping with her?
Well, their vocal tracts aren't. I don't know if that was edited or what happened, but their vocal tracts are not shaped like ours, and so I don't think that they're ever going to be able to speak fluently in English like this. Oh, they're limited. These apes are limited in their vocabulary only by the number of signs on their lexigram boards, and even then, they're very creative with their combinations. Kanzi, as you probably remember, describes kale as slow lettuce because it takes a long time to chew. And Pambanisha, when we were eating the cookies, I don't even have a word for this, so I'm just going to describe it. But they're two vanilla wafers with icing in between, and she was calling that bread surprise. I think Kanzi calls pizza bread, cheese, tomatoes, or something. It's, you know, they come up with combinations. But when I'm speaking to them, I speak to them as I'm speaking to you, and they understand. And I do know one of the things that was so fascinating and fun about the trip to York University was that they do have tape recordings of the apes, and they can identify spots where the apes are vocalizing English words, but it's never going to sound like this because we don't have the same shaped jaws and tongues. And we're not capable of their language either, and they do have one. Yes.
Is there a reason why they
Is there a reason why they don't teach them sign language? Well, most of the ape studies over the past 40 years have involved sign language. This particular one began with lexigrams. It was as part of a study that was going to help aphasic children and children who just grew up and do not have speech for whatever reason, helping them to have some language and to be able to express themselves. No, I don't think that there was really. This was the method that they started with, and I think it's important to point out that these apes are not actually taught. They acquire language, and in the same manner as human children, human infants, which is to say through exposure and a desire to communicate. And they discovered this. It sounds so obvious now when I say it, and in fact, in retrospect, it probably was to them. The matriarch of the group at the Trust was 8 years old when she was wild-caught from the jungle, and she was at Yerkes in Georgia. And she was leased or acquired or somehow came into the care of Dr. Sue Savadrumba. And they worked with her for about a year, or maybe 2 years, maybe 2.5 years, trying very hard to teach her the lexigrams. And with very limited success, she ended up being able to master maybe a handful. But she had an infant with her. And this was Kanzi. And when Yerkes asked for Matata back to get her pregnant, and she was separated from Kanzi for a while, she came back. But when he realized that she was actually gone and not just hiding, he panicked because she was the one who always bartered and negotiated for him, and started using lexigrams. He'd absolutely fluent, had picked up every single one while he was just hanging around in the room while they were trying to teach Matata. And it turned out that he was just in that language window, that magical language window. And so they have very high hopes for baby Tico, who is being exposed to language from day one. And in fact, they've got a little baby lexigram board for him that they're already carrying around and using with him. So he's going to be, I'm going to be watching very closely. He's going to be capable of a great deal, I think. Yes.
I'm curious as to how many there are in the United States, and I understand that they're terribly endangered in their natural habitat. They're being used, I mean, there's civil wars going on, they're being used with bushmeat and everything else, and terribly endangered. How many are there here, and is there, what will happen to the species?
The question was how many bonobos are in the States and how many are in the wild, and what's going to happen to them. I think there are, I'm not sure of the exact number, I think there are around 120 bonobos in the States. There are not a lot. There are only a few zoo exhibits featuring them, largely because of their sexual habits, which resemble human sexual habits just altogether too much for visiting families' comforts. The best estimates for wild bonobos, and they are, they only exist in a very small portion of the Congolese forest, is between 15,000 and 50,000. And the reason that we don't know more specifically than that is that they are very difficult to track because they move silently, and this is really good for them because their food source in the Congo is abundant, but they are critically endangered, and the reason is us. Through the bushmeat trade and through the Civil War, so both deliberately and carelessly, we are killing them. And so we still have time, and I hope that we step up and do something and help protect them. There are efforts. All of the people, the Bonobo Conservation Initiative, the Lola Ya Bonobo Sanctuary, which is in the Congo, that takes the orphan babies from the bushmeat trade, raises them, and re-releases them into the forest. The people that are trying to preserve protected areas where there will not be poachers and hunters. The trust is funding the Lola Ya and also the Forest of Hope in Rwanda. So everyone, I think, is working very closely together to try and help them and try to preserve them, because it's a terribly, terribly sad thing. Thank you. I can sign books now. Thanks.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.